All right, so a quick chazara, your gimel mebeis. So we're in the sugya of yadais, as you remember from yesterday. So when it comes to tumah v'tahara, if you have a food, and that's the starting point of all of this, is that the item that we're talking about has to be a food. If it's just, if it's like wine or something, that's what we said, it's detrimental. You don't want any stems in your wine. But if you have a grape, and the grape has a stem, so the stem, you're going to hold on to it. Instead of touching a grape, you hold the stem. It's useful for you. It's a handle for the grape. In which case, the stem has the same halachic status in terms of tumah v'tahara as the fruit itself. So the way that the Gemara got involved with all of this was it said that, so I'm going to just go quickly through Gemara Yud Beis, Yud Gimel Amud Beis. And Yud Gimel Amud Beis, so the Gemara said, remember, Abba Amar Rav Huna. Rabbi Abba said in the name of Huna, the gas in the yadais, if a person is harvesting grapes for the purpose of making wine, not for the purposes of eating grapes, so all of those stems do not have a status of a yad, they are not considered to be handles, and they are not susceptible to tumah, they don't impart tumah, it has nothing to do with the wine itself. Rav Menashe Bar Gida Amar Rav Huna, not Rav Gida, had a different statement from Rav Huna. If a person is harvesting wheat, barley, whatever, also in the yadis. So the Gemara says, "Man, the Amar Kaitzer, the one that said that it's not considered yadis when it comes to harvesting wheat, Kol Shekein Kaitzer." So for sure, he would hold that there are no yadis when it comes to the stems of the grapes. Because it's not nichalei. We discussed this morning, right? Segresh Adalai nichalei. This is the terminology. It's not good for him. Because he doesn't want it to absorb the wine. But the one who holds that is not considered to be a handle when it comes to the grapes, then it's only because it's detrimental to the wine. But when it comes to harvesting wheat, let's say, he might say that it does have a yad, because he wants it to be attached. He wants the stalk to be attached to the kernels, because it'll prevent the schach from blowing away. So maybe they wouldn't agree. The name of Rav Menashe Bar Gida Tanaihi. So this statement of Rav Menashe Bar Gida that there's no such thing as yadais when it comes to wheat or barley, maybe that's a machlokes tanoim. Sani, as we learn a brayse, suchiteinu and teinu parking vehenu and avin kashin vehenu shibolin. That's one we care about. It's a kashin and shibolin. You have stalks and they have the grain still attached. Mechavdes ben tamarim. Another example when you have the palm branches that have dates on them. But in all of these cases, where you have branches with fruit attached, kulam and psoles miruval oichin ksheir, all of them, provided that you have psoles, the non-edible part, is the majority over the edible part, so then it's kasher for schach, but otherwise, psula, it's pasul, because you're not allowed to use food for schach, it's makabal tuma. Acherim oimrim, but acherim say, it's not just a question of fruit versus psoles. He holds, as you remember, I drew on the board yesterday, that we're going to divide up each stalk into three parts. There's going to be the shiboles, the kernel part. There's going to be the closest stalk to the kernel. That's going to be considered the handle. And then there's going to be the farthest away part of the stalk from the kernel. That'll just be considered, soilless, extra, additional. So you're not going to be able to have valid schach until you have more of section three, the farthest away part. That's the roiv on both the yadais and the kernels. My lava, isn't this what they're arguing about? The maris of yeshan yadis, maris of yadis, that according to the achirim, so apparently the stalks do have yadais, and according to the Tanakama, to the Rabbana, so the stalks do not have yadais. Isn't exactly what they're arguing about? So Gemara says, well, yeah, the Rabbi Abba, according to Rabbi Abba, we talked about the grapes, vadai tanaihi, certainly it's a machlokes tanoim, but Rav Menashe Bar Gida, can get out of it and suggest that maybe everyone would agree that when it comes to our case of schach, using wheat or barley for schach, everyone would agree that as long as you have more stalk than the kernel, you're okay. Why? How can you do that? How does he say that? What does he do with Achirim, who holds a three parts to each stalk? Rav Menashe would say, the whole world holds a kaitzer l'schach. If someone harvests for the purpose of schach, in that case, since he's harvesting to use them for schach, then there's no such thing as a handle that is makabel tumah. What's the case where Achirim and the Rabbanan are arguing about where the stalk is divided into three parts? Because originally when the wheat was harvested, it was going to be used for flour, for eating. And then he changed his mind and decided to use it for schach after it was harvested. That's when they argue about whether or not the stalk has a yak. Okay, this is what we're going to focus on today. So if you weren't paying attention, you better start paying attention. So okay, according to Rav Menashe Bar Gida, the machlokes about whether or not a stalk can be said to have three parts or only two, which I will draw one more time on the board for you. So we'll draw two drawings. So this is the kernel part, and then comes the stalk. Do you divide it into three sections or two? So the Rabbanan seem to say that you split the shibboleth part off, the kernel part, that's for sure food. It's going to be made into flour or whatever. And the rest of it, we are not going to view it as yodos, as a yad, as a handle at all. It's all psoilas. It's nothing. Other way to look at it, and this is what was called achirim. Achirim hold that apparently divided into three sections. So this, of course, is the stalk everyone agrees, but this is called yad. That's the part that you can hold on to. And the rest of it is just extra. That's what we will call psoilas. So do you view it like the Rabbana that it's two sections, or it's three? So what are they arguing about? So Rav Menashe Bar Gida suggests that they're not arguing over whether or not there is a yad. They're only arguing about whether there is a yad in a very specific case. When this was harvested for the purpose of eating. Since it was harvested for the purpose of eating, so everyone should agree that there's a yad, because you can hold on to it in order to do whatever you're going to do with it. So, of course it has a yad, it's food. But, then he changed his mind, and he said, wow, you know what, I have way too much to eat. This section of it, right, this amount of it, whatever, we're going to use it for schach. Okay, so then what changes at that point? So according to Achirim, nothing changes. But according to the Rabbanan, then this yad section gets erased. It sounds like it ceases to be a yad once the person changes his mind and decides that this shiboyles is now going to be used for schach. It's no longer defined as food. So it's like in his mind, he has changed the status of the whole stalk. He didn't do anything, right? But in his mind, because he changed his mind, I'm not going to eat it anymore. It's not food anymore. Abracadabra. Now it is schach. Well, since it's schach, there's no such thing as a yad anymore, because it's not food. We're not going to use it for food anymore, right? We're just going to use the whole thing for schach. So the kernel, everyone agrees, is still going to be considered food, because at the end of the day, it's food. Make it into flour. But the stalk part that's closest to it, so it's not going to be considered a yad anymore, because why should it be? It's not food anymore. We're not going to use it for food anymore. Using it for schach. That's the thing where it sounds like it's saying. So Rav Menashe Bar Gida is going to suggest that this machlokes between Rabbanan and Achirim is in a case where you originally harvested it for food, then you changed your mind. And the machlokes would seem to be, when you change your mind, is that enough to remove the... You ready? Is that enough to remove the status of the yad? It's no longer considered to be a handle because we're no longer planning on eating it. Can you do that? Can you simply, with thought alone, change the status of what this stalk is? It's no longer food. Now, it's schach. And is that enough to take away the status of the yad from being makabel tumah?
Before, after you cut it.
It's already been harvested. It was harvested for food. But now, after it's been harvested, and when it was harvested for food, it had a status of a yad, because it's food. But now I want to use it for schach. So can we suggest that my thought process is enough to change the status of the object? It's food. The stalk is food. But the stem is no longer going to be used as a yad, because I'm not using it for food. I'm using it for schach. Does that work? Okay, so let's see it inside. So the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Abba, Valay it's Tanaihi. But Rav Menashe Bar Gida, Milema Tanaihi, who says it has to be a Machlokas Tanoim? Amalach Rav Menashe is going to say to you, the Kulei Amma, the whole world, Savri reasons, this whole world holds. If you harvest for schach, meaning when you originally cut it off of the ground, you were going to use it for schach, then everyone would agree. There's no yad. No yad, because you're not harvesting it for food. But our case, that this machlok is in our bonan and achirim. Here, what are we dealing with? That originally was harvested for eating. That means that he changed his mind about them. For the purpose of schach. Now he's going to use it for schach. So Gemara asks, if he originally harvested them for food, why would the Rabbanan say that it stops having a yad? It had a yad originally. It was harvested for food. So of course it has a yad. What's the talk about? Where did the Rabbanan come along saying that it loses its status of a yad? If you'll say, Kosavri Rabbanan, the Rabbanan hold, Kevon de Nimlach Aleyan Lesichach. Once he changed his mind and decided he's going to use it for schach, Butla Le Machashavtoi. What's butla? Nullified. Canceled. What? Like something called lebatala could be like to, but it means literally to nullify something, to cancel something out. So batale machshavtei, nullified it is his original thought. So he nullified his thought process, and that's enough to nullify the status of the yad. That's the suggestion of the Gemara. Maybe that's the pshat in the Rabbanan. Okay, are we clear on that? Is everyone okay with that? Should I explain it again? Okay, one more time. So the Rabbanan and Achirim argue over whether or not this section. We'll just remember it. We'll call it section 1, where the kernels are. Section 2, which is the closest part of the stem to the kernel. And section 3, the psoilus, the farthest part away. So there was, theoretically, there are three sections to this. According to the Rabbanan, no, there are only two sections. There's the food part and the stem. According to the Achirim, there are three sections. There's the food part, there's a handle, and then there's the rest of it, there's the rest of the stem, which is psoil, which is not part of the food. That's the question. What do we do about this? Does this section called a yad exist? If it does, then it's a big problem for our schach. Why? Because you require more psoilus to be mevatel both section 2 and section 1. You need to require more of section 3, you need that to be mevatel 2 and 1. But if you hold a Rabbanan, there are only two sections. How hard could it possibly be to be Mavato, section 1? You don't need that much of a stalk. You with me? So that's the question. So what are they arguing about? What are they arguing about? So originally we thought they're arguing over whether or not there is a section 2 ever when it comes to wheat. And then the Gemara says, no. That's only when you're harvesting it for schach. When you're harvesting it for schach, then you're right. Then everyone agrees there's only two sections. Everyone agrees only two sections. Because it's not defined as food. You're not going to have a handle if you're going to use it for schach. So what's the case? The case is where they're arguing, put your phones away, it'll be much easier for you to hold cup in the Gemara. The case is where the person originally harvested it for food. For food. So it has a yad. It has three sections according to everyone. But then he changed his mind. Maybe because he has so much of it, or I don't know. We don't care what the case is, right? Because we're not seminary girls. We don't care what the case is, but the point is, now he's going to use it for schach. So the question now is, does it have three sections, or magically now it only has two? Well, originally it had three, because it was harvested for food. How did you get rid of section 2? How did the Rabbanan get rid of section 2? Because he changed his mind. So that's what the Gemara is going to toy with. Yeah, maybe exactly that's right. Maybe as soon as he changes his mind, that's enough to erase section 2. Because it's not food anymore. He's going to use it for schach. If, let me ask you a question. If he had harvested it for schach, would there be a section 2? No. So now that he changed his mind from food to schach, isn't that enough to erase section 2? So that's what we're going to deal with. Yeah.
Why is there a section 2 if it's food? It's not like a grape or a cherry, like a fruit.
You're probably going to make it into flour, you know? It's like, you could toast it, maybe. Yeah, you know, I agree with you.
You don't need it to eat the wheat. It's not necessary.
Yeah, so what's the typical use?
Pop, what does it matter?
Right.
So what would be the typical use for it? I don't know. I don't know if it's just easier to deal with. And we'll see some svaras as the Gemara goes on. But when we finish the Gemara, let's see if we solve the same question.
So when you initially cut it, right, there's no yad. If it's being cut for a stop,
right,
then there's no yad.
Right.
How does that work, though? Isn't that based on lachshava?
Right, but nothing changed. In other words, when it's harvested, when it harvested, it never attained, never gained the status of a yad. So the starting point is it has no yad. Our problem is, since it was harvested for eating purpose, for food, it had a yad according to everyone. And then the question is, can you simply erase that by changing your mind about what you're going to use it for? It has a status of a yad, and tumah v'tahara is shayach to it. Maybe it even became tumah. Can you erase the tumah because it's no longer going to use it for food? So how do you just get rid of the status of the yad? That's the question that we're dealing with. Okay, so the Gemara says, mi batle machshav v'achi? Is it true that you can nullify a thought process by changing your mind? B'hachi, with this, we learn in a Mishnah. Now the Gemara is going to, you have to tell me. You know, Gemara is law. Anybody here actually considering being a lawyer?
Yeah.
So this is going to be very relevant to you. So you have a precedent. Whenever you have a precedent, the argument that any good lawyer is going to make is that our case, if he's trying to get out of the precedent, okay? If he's trying to get out of the precedent, is that our case doesn't match the precedent. Right? And you have to figure out what's different about your case that your client shouldn't be punished or whatever, shouldn't fall into the rule of that precedent. That's one of the major ways that a lawyer is going to deal with it. So here's the question. The Rabbanon claim there are two sections, not three. But the problem is we have a precedent of three. So how do you get out of the precedent? So here's the precedent. The precedent is, Kol HaKelim, Yordan Lidei Tumma B'machshava. All Kelim. What are Kelim?
Vessels.
So it means you took metal, you took wood, and you made it into a vessel. All of those vessels, Yordan Lidei Tumma B'machshava, are going to be considered a vessel, in other words, they'll become susceptible to tumah with your thought process. V'ein oilin mitumah san, but they can't cease to be a kli. They can't stop becoming susceptible to tumah. Ela v'shinui maaseh, unless you actually did an action. An action is enough to change the status of something, but just because you decide, you know, well, this is not a bowl anymore, now it's a hat. I mean, what do you mean you can just change what you just because of your mind, your thought process? Like, what? Not good enough.
What would be an example of an action to change?
Okay, so we'll see Rashi. So what does Rashi say? Rashi says, Yordin lidei tumah b'machshava. Mi shechashav alav shezeh yiyeh gemar malachta. Person decides this is a finished object. Kegoin. Sheibdu ledargesh Duluvski, whatever you pronounce that, that he went ahead and he finished a leather product, you know, things that require some sort of finishing touches. So it's a natural process, it's a natural item until you do the finishing touches, until you, what do you call it? Ibud, you know, the tanning and the whatever you have to do to leather to finish it up. Once it's considered ma'ubud, it's finished, so then it's makabal tumah at that point. Even though you might want to do more to it, maybe you want to, I mean, there could be lots of things that a person might want to do. He's not prepared to, it's not considered finished yet. Maybe he wants to make it into something further. But this particular person said, no, done. Whatever I'm going to use it for, or sell it for, it's done. So with his machshava, he was able to turn it into a kli. There's a big difference between tefillin straps and a sandal, right? Straps are finished, they're straps. A sandal is not a sandal until it's a sandal. So with machshava, you can decide, done, this is what I'm going to do with it, this is how I'm going to sell it, it's finished, it's a finished product.
But so let's say like the sandal, then you wouldn't be able to actually change you wouldn't be able to do it, make an action for the sandal to change it to something else.
Well, right? Sandal's a much further finished product.
So once it's finished, I mean, could you actually, like, a finished product, could you actually make it further finished, or no?
Well, you maybe wanted a different color. You know, maybe, you know. You could always argue depending on what the case is.
So you could always get a little bit more.
Sometimes. Depending on the situation.
And so that would basically reduce the time.
But what we're saying is at an earlier stage where it's less likely to be a kli, you can decide it's a kli because that's what you want. You're done. So in olim mitumas and mimachshava teres kabbalas tuma in olim mimachshava kagoyin ibdu l'shulchan or zushulchan or l'dargesh v'chishav alav l'ritzuais v'sandalin in mimachshava matelas teres kabbalas tuma. But let's say that a person with his machshava decided that he's going to make straps and that it's done, and then he changes his mind and he said, I want it to be sandals. I want to make it into a table. I want to do, you know, whatever. So once his machshava said it, and now it's makabel tuma, so can he now just change his mind again? His answer is no. Now he has to actually do something. But once he does something and he starts doing something to it that makes it clear that it's going to be made into something further, okay, so then it's no longer the raw, it's back to like raw material. But with his thought process alone, it's not good enough because his thought process is good enough to make it a kli, but his thought process is not good enough to then erase that status once he gave it that status. That's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara fleshes this out, the second line, by saying a rule. Maise, moitzi miyad maise umiyad machshava. An action will remove something from another action and even from a thought process. Oh, I should say the other way around. An action will remove something from an action and from a thought process. Machshava, but a thought process, ein matzia, doesn't cancel out or remove something, lo miyad ma'isev, lo miyad machshava, neither from an action nor from another thought process. One might have argued that a thought process can remove, can change a thought process. But a thought process can't change a ma'isev. But a ma'aseh certainly is good enough to change a thought process. Okay, so that's the precedent. So the precedent is that with thought alone, you can determine something to be a kli. And once it's determined to be a kli, your thought process is not significant enough to change the status. You have to do an action. That's the rule. Good? So here too, you have stalks. We harvested them, and with our thought process, we determined that it was going to be used for food. Then we changed our mind. That's a machshava. So with our machshava alone, or changing our mind, and now we're going to use it for schach, that can't change the status of the yad that we created with machshava. We should have to do some kind of ma'aseh. So until you do a ma'aseh, you can't change the status of a yad. So that's the kasha and the rabbanon. How can the rabbanon say that if it was harvested originally for food, and now you change your mind, you want to use it for schach, it loses the status of the yad. Section 2 disappears. Can't be. So the rule is you have to do a ma'aseh to change a machshava. Good?
What
would be like the last thing you could do for the... We'll discuss. We'll have one in just a second. So does anybody want to take a guess at what the difference is, how we get out of the precedent? Is it really that late? So Gemara says, if you'll say, you're a good lawyer, you'll say, honey, mile kalim. That's talking about vessels. Kalim. Because once you decide that this is a finished product, okay, so it's significant. Your thought process has made this into a finished product. Now you have straps that you can use for anything. They're straps at this point. We're talking about a bunch of stalks, man. We're not talking about a vessel, a shoes, or straps. We're talking about straw. I mean, it's not so chashuv that your mind frame is going to determine if this is an object of some significance. Come on, it's either a handle for food or something, a handle for food. It doesn't achieve the status of something that you granted such great significance to because of your thought process. We're just talking about a bunch of stalks. V'chitem, if you'll say that's the distinction. Hanei mile, that rule, that machshava is not enough to ruin a machshava. You know, ma'isa. That's by kelim, the chashivi, because there's a significance to your thought process. Aval yodos, when it comes to handles of food, the literach achilin inu, in any case, all that makes it a yad is that it helps you eat it or hold it or something like that. Maybe b'machshava naseh, there become a handle in machshava, but b'machshava sa'alka, and with thought process machshava alone, you can remove the status. So I don't know that your precedent is so convincing. So Gemara says, another opportunity, another attack. But didn't we learn in the Mishnah? Kol yadis ha'oichlen, shebasis an begairin.
all food handles that you bust this on in the Goyren. Now, the Goyren is like a threshing floor or a storehouse, something like that. But it's used to store your grain. So it could be used also at the same time to thresh it. Now, threshing means getting rid of both the stalks and also the chaff. You know, ultimately, that's where you're headed. All you want at the end of the day is the kernels. There's a lot of junk that's there that's preventing you from getting at the kernels. So the threshing process, like we talk about Shabbos. On Shabbos, we talk about dush, threshing. So we should talk about that another time and develop that idea. But when we speak about threshing, basically the idea is you're separating the kernels from all the other junk that's there that's preventing you from getting to them. So we don't know what bust the sun means yet. But the Gemara says, I have a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, food handles, our case. And you bust the sun to them in the garment. Tahor reis. Then they become tahor. In other words, you can remove the status of the yad through what's called besisa. Now, we don't know what that is yet, so I'm calling it besisa, bust the sun. But we'll see in a second. But whatever you do that, you do get rid of the status of being a handle. Bishlam alaman damar basa san hitir agudan. I'm good according to the one that holds that basa san means you untie their bundles, their aguda, their binding. Shapir, then that's good. Okay, what does that mean? That means that one approach to basa san means that once you get into the garment and you have all of these stalks and you're going to use it for food. You're going to grind it into flour, let's say. So what did you do? You harvested them for food. You tied them up. And you brought them to where you're going to thresh them. As soon as, according to this opinion, as soon as you untie them, they're no longer handles. Untying them alone. Is that a maise? Sigmar assumes no. That's not a maise. It's just an expression of your thought process that you're finished using the stalks. Because why did you want them for? The answer is to get them to the garden. Because if you have a bunch of kernels, it's kind of hard to schlep them from one place to another. You guys ever try it? No. But if you ever wanted to, you can think about it in your mind. If you ever have a bunch of kernels, they're very small and may fall apart and whatever. You don't want to collect every single little one. You harvest them all and you collect them by the stalks. And then you bind them together and you have a bunch of stalks that are all bound together. And you know, you can picture it in your head, you know. And you're schlepping the stalks with the kernels on the ends. But to collect each individual kernels, all those little kernels, that's much more complicated. So once you untie them, so what are you expressing? That you're finished with the stalks. And now you're going to go through the threshing process, and now you're going to start extracting all the kernels. You don't need the stalks anymore. In which case, they're no longer considered handles. You don't need them anymore. But you didn't do an action yet. You didn't start to separate them or weaken them. You didn't do anything to the actual stalks yet. All you did was express your das, your intention that you don't want them anymore. So according to that, yes, great, that's the Rabbanan, right? So that matches the Rabbanan. That with thought process alone, untying them, you didn't do anything. The thought process alone, so you can change the status of the yad. Good. So then that's good. But not everyone agrees about that. Elman de Amor, my Basasan, according to the one that holds, what does Basasan mean? Basasan mamish. Basista literally means like threshing. It means to crush them or to do something with them, to weaken them, something like that. Basasan mamish, my Ekalamimer. Then what are you going to say? So what exactly is Basasan? So it's a little bit of a sticky issue, but for our purposes, Basasan basically means, if you mean Basasan mamish, that it means that you started the threshing process. Which means that you crush them a little bit. Bottom line is they're still attached to all of the kernels. They're still attached to this, to the tops of the stalks. But you've begun the process of weakening them. You did something to weaken them, so eventually they will fall apart or fall off. But you actually did a maise to begin the threshing process. So if you're going to say that, so then the reason why they cease to be yada, they cease to be handles, is not because you untied them and thought anything. It's because you actually started the threshing process. You with me? So according to that, there's no proof for the Rabbanan. It's a kasha on the Rabbanan. Because here you see again that it's not a machshava that removes the status of the yad. It's an action that removes the status of the yad. And in our case, that ain't happening. So what are you going to say?
So Gemara answers, Hacha, in our case of harvesting for food and then changing your mind and deciding you're going to use them for schach, Nami Shabbasis on Mamish. It's a case where he started to thresh. He started the disha process. Okay, so what's the case? Yeah, he says the guy started threshing them, or he decided he's going to use them for schach, and he decided to start the threshing process, or I don't know, whatever it is. But he did an actual maise where he doesn't need the stalks anymore. So that removed the status of them being yodos. And then he said, oh, perfect, we'll use it for schach. So because he did a maise, it nullified the status of the yadayim. So Gemara says, if that's the case, so then let's go back to the other opinion. Why in the world would anybody say it still is considered to be a yad? You figured out the Rabbanan, but now you messed up Acherim. Because Acherim said there are three sections to it, even after you changed your mind and decided to use it for schach. So now the problem's back on the other side. So Gemara answers, the Omer Rabbi Yosi. He's going to have to hold like Rabbi Yosi. It's not, as we learn in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yosi medamek. Rabbi Yosi holds that even after you do this besisa, they're still tamei. They're still considered to be a dayim. Why would he say that? Hi, Mai. So then, what's going to be in our case of schach? Bish lamahasam tamei Rabbi Yosi chazik Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Why is Rabbi Yosi holding that even after you start the threshing process, you still have a yad? Because over there, the reason of Rabbi Yosi is chazia, it's still apropos, according to Rishim ben Lakish. What do you mean? The Amar Rishim ben Lakish, Rish Lakish said, because as long, translation, literal translation, since they are still fitting to flip them with an eter. Eter we're going to translate as a pitchfork. As long as you still have a stalk, then you can flip around the stalks at ease. Even if they're a little bit softer than they were before, a little bit weakened, but still you can use the stalks. The stalks are very useful to you. Now, clearly you've done it. Okay, so let's just spell this out. There's two opinions here. There are Rabbanan and Rabbi Yosi. According to Rabbanan, once you start the threshing process, you've not only expressed your intention that you're going to use this for food, and thereby perhaps removing the status of Yadayim, in addition, you did an action that expresses that you don't care about these Yodayim anymore. Rabbi Yosi is saying that even though you've done that, sof kol sof, at the end of the day, it's still beneficial to you that they're attached. Because if you need to flip them or move them or whatever, obviously it's much easier to flip them with a stalk than if you're just dealing with a bunch of kernels. So even though clearly you've expressed your intention with your mind, and now with an action, what we call besisa, still, they're beneficial to you. So as long as they're still attached, they're still beneficial, you still have to call them yadayim. That's Rabbi Yosi. Now, that's debatable, because you did an action expressing you don't care about them anymore. But Rabbi Yosi says, yeah, but at the end of the day, it's still useful to you. So we're going to have a ping pong back and forth. Who's going to win that one? So that's a machlokes. But wait a minute. But that's in a case when you want to flip them around because they're in your goyren, you know, they're in your threshing floor, and you're going to want to get them from place to place or flip them or whatever you're going to do. But we're talking about schach. Why would this machlokes still exist by schach? So the case we're suggesting is you brought them to your threshing floor and you started the threshing process. So now, according to Rabbanan, it has no more yadayim. That's Rabbanan. And according to Acherim, it's still, as Rabbi Yosi's opinion, because still, you can still use them to flip around with your pitchfork. Now you use them for schach, but when you use them for schach, you're not going to want to flip them around with a pitchfork. So shouldn't the besisa work, according to everyone, to remove the yadayim if you're using them for schach? If you're doing the besisa because you want to use it for food, you still might flip it with your pitchfork. Okay, I understand acherim. But in our case, you're going to use it for schach. You're not using a pitchfork on your sukkah. So why would anyone say in our case, once you do a maise to remove the status of the yadayim, why shouldn't that work for the sukkah? Elahach lamai chazia. But Ella, rather, here in our case of sukkah, lamai chazi, what are they fit for? What are the stalks going to do for you after you do your besisa? So you want to take a guess?
The Gemara answers, Chazya lechisasar. They're fitting, they're appropriate, because when you want to destroy your sukkah, meaning you want to remove your schach, right? You're taking down your sukkah. Leminkat lahu bigilaihu. To be able to take them off and get rid of them, or whatever you're going to do when you get rid of your sukkah, it's easier to move them around and get rid of them if you're holding them by their extensions, by their stalks, by their gilion, or whatever exactly Sharish of Gilayu is. But it's easier to get rid of them and to deal with them when they have a stalk than when they don't. So that's the end of that section of the Gemara. So what just happened? So bottom line is, the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Nasha ben Gida, so you do have this machlokes, at least if you did an action to invalidate the handles. So then we can talk about whether or not the action of besisa completely works to invalidate the yad, or it doesn't completely work, because as long as it's still beneficial to you, it still remains a yad. That could be the machlokes between the Rabbanan and Achirim that's on the board. Gufa. Okay, let's focus on a little point over here. Gufa means back to the body of the matter. Kol yadas ha'oichlin shabasasan bagurin. We said that all, I mean, it's really just going to rehash everything we just said. There's nothing new in this gufa. It's just going to spell out everything we just said. So don't get nervous. Kol yadas ha'oichlin shabasasan bagurin. All handles of food that you thresh or began the threshing process in the gurin, tahoris. The handles become tahor, meaning they cease to be defined as handles. And Rabbi Yosi says, no, they're still going to be considered handles. We explain, because you can still flip them around. It's easier to flip them around with your pitchfork as long as they have stalks. My basasan, what does it mean that you basasan them? Rabbi Yochanan Amar basasan mamish. Rechan says, means you began the threshing process. Rabbi Eliezer Aymer, hitir agdan. He holds, it just means that, Rabbi Eliezer says, it just means you untied the bundles. Bishlam Rabbi Elazar, Damar Basa San Hitir Agadan. According to Rabbi Elazar, it says all Hitir is untie the bundles. Hainu Demetame Rabbi Yosi. So that's why Rabbi Yosi says that doesn't work. Machshava alone isn't going to do anything for you. Elder Rabbi Yochanan, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who holds that you actually began the threshing process, Damar Basa San Mamish. Amai Metame Rabbi Yosi. Why would Rabbi Yosi say that the Yadayim still remain? Why did Rabbi Yosi still tell me? Amr Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Hoyel Veruis Lavchan Be'eter. Rabbi Lakish says, because now you can still flip them around with a pitchfork, so it's still beneficial to you. So the Gemara just spelled out everything we just worked out, but that's the whole braisa with all of the comments of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, and then finally Rabbi Lakish, who finishes up by explaining the last bit. So nothing changed with that goof of the Gemara, it's just the Gemara's way of spelling it out very, very clearly. That was the original Shakavataria over that particular issue. Now the Gemara has a very short piece which is relevant to next week's parsha, and it's an agadita. And the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Elazar, lama nimshla tefilasan shel tzadikim ke'eter." Remember, next week's parsha it says, "Vayetar Yitzchak lenoichach ishtoi ki akarahi." That it says that Yitzchak davened. Vayetar. Yetar is a really funny word. Vayetar Yitzchak, he davened lenoichach ish opposite his wife ki akarahi, because she was barren. And that's when they, you know, she gets pregnant with the twins, right? Yaakov and Esa. Lama nimshal tefilas shel tzadikim le'eter. Why are the tefilas of tzadikim given the metaphoric term of a eter, some kind of pitchfork? Loimar lecha, to teach you, ma eter ze, just like a pitchfork, ma hapech ha tzfua begoyren, mimokon lemokon, flips around the grain in the goyren, from place to place. After tefilas shel tzadikim, so too the tefilas of tzadikim, a hafeches daiter shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, flips around the intention, if you will, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mimidas achzarius, from a trait of cruelty, the midas rachmanus, to a trait of mercifulness, sensitivity. Period. End of that section of Gemara. Anybody want to take a stab at that? What does that mean? The tefillos of tzaddikim are called the pitchfork because it flips it from one thing to another. It flips HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midah from one to another.
Changes the mind.
Yeah, so to speak, changes HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mind. That's what itfar means. But yet, there's a special kind of tefillah.
This is what changed the din?
No. I don't know. I'm asking. So I didn't have a chance to get through it all yet. I wanted to get through it more, so maybe I'll get through it. Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow if you remind me. But you guys know what Rav Shimshon Pinkus was? You guys ever read any of his stuff? Rav Shimshon Pinkus? No? Sharim B'Tfila, Gates of Prayer, Gates of all kinds of things? No? Nobody?
Yeah.
Yeah? So he has a sefer that he wrote called Sharim B'Tfila, The Gates of Prayer, where he points out that tefillah is referred to by a lot of different terms. Here's one of them, itur. Itur is a form of prayer. Well, why is it any different than mispalel? Why is it any different than tzaka, vayitzak? You have so many different words for davening. And he says each different word for davening refers to a different type of tefillah. Sometimes tefillah can be singing. It can be shira. It can be rina. It can be tzaka. It can be tefillah. Why are there so many words for tefillah, for prayer? Is it prayer, prayers, prayers, prayer? The answer is no. Because sometimes tefillah can be something that's very different. Sometimes a person sings to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in prayer. And sometimes a person beseeches HaKadosh Baruch Hu with tears. Sometimes not with tears. So each one has a different element to it and accomplishes different things depending on what's going on. So there's something called itur that this Gemara is pointing out. And itur apparently is flipping something over. Now, when you flip something over, you know, why are you flipping something over? It means like you tried to get it from one place to another and it like didn't work. So you gotta like try again. You gotta flip it, you know. So when you go to a human being and you ask him for something and he says no. You know, you go to your parents. Does it ever happen to you? You go to your parents. You say, can I have X, right? And you really want it. And they're like, no. No, I'm not paying for that, or I don't want it, or whatever, right? So you wait a couple hours, right? Or you wait a couple days or something, and you come back, you know, and you say, but I really want it, I really need it, you know? So the more times you come back to a person that says no, the more you're a nudnik, the more he just gets aggravated and irritated. It's, I said no! Please, no! But apparently when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's different. And the most fundamental reason that it's different is because it's not about getting the thing. Because when it comes to a human being, all you want is the thing. It's not about the relationship of asking. It's not about coming back so that we can talk again. It's about getting the thing. So if a person said no, the person said no. And the more you push it, the more you get aggravated. I said no. When it comes to tefillah, flipping it over and coming back and doing it again is because it's not just, or maybe not primarily, about getting the thing. It's about the relationship and the interaction of the tefillah itself. Understanding that it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that every time you come back, you appreciate that a little bit more. And that everything that it's about tefillah, about thinking about why you want it, thinking about what are the consequences if someone else doesn't get it, what are the consequences if you get it. And then it becomes a whole conversation. So that whole conversation with yourself and the conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is perhaps the most fundamental element of tefillah. You know, what does it say? Why were the imos akaros? It's a very interesting question. Because I'll say, why were every single one of our imos barren? You'll tell me, but Leah wasn't. And I'll tell you, yes, she was. And I'll leave it up to you to figure out, okay, another time. Why were they all barren? So Chazal say, why? Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is misave, taiva. Kadosh Baruch Hu has a taiva for tefillas and shel tzaddikim. For the tefillos of the tzaddikim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu made them incapable of having children so that they would daven. Interesting. It's a little backwards, right? Usually people have a problem. Because of the problem, so they daven to get rid of the problem. Here, the whole point of the problem was to create the tefillah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to come to Him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to daven. And something may be withheld from us, not because we're not supposed to have it, but because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is waiting for us to ask. And sometimes we need to ask again, and again, and again, because maybe we're not serious enough, maybe we're not asking for the right reasons, maybe we don't really believe it's coming from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, maybe we have to keep asking until we really are asking in the right way. But the Eter, it flips it over again, and you flip it over again, you flip it over again. And there's some kind of tefillah called Itur. So Mirta Hashem, maybe we can go over it again tomorrow and try to figure out what exactly is that what's unique about that tefillah called Itur in Rav Pinkus. But that's what this Gemara is finishing up with, is that there's something called an Eter, and there's a tefillah called Itur, a form of tefillah called Itur, that is the realm of the tefillah shel tzadikim. Because Mahapeches Daito shel Kadosh Baruch Hu, it flips things around from one mida to another. So just to get started, last few minutes, Mishnah says, Mesachachim Menesarim Dibri Bihuda. Ever see a sukkah where the schach is made out of boards?
No.
Never. Never. Bihuda says you can use boards. Can you use boards? It looks like a roof of a house. I don't know. We'll have to figure it out. Bihuda says, no problem. You can use boards for your schach. They're made out of wood. They're not kaler. The Rebbe Meir Oyser, Rebbe Meir says, absolutely not. If you put a board on top of your sukkah and the width is 4 tefachim, how much is that approximately? 4 tefachim? I don't know. Foot and a half? I don't know. 4 tefachim. Kshera, it's kosher. As long as you don't sleep under it. Wait, who's that according to? That's according to everybody? Rabbi Huda is the one that says you can use boards, but Rabbi Meir says you're not allowed to use boards. What Rabbi Meir says, you can use boards as long as you don't sleep, it's 4 tefachim, as long as you sleep under it. What's going on over here? Or is this only if it's off to the side, maybe? Remember, you talked about Dofen Akuma? Remember our Dofen Akuma? That if you have your wall and it reaches some schach pasul, we can just view that as a bent wall. Well, maybe that's what's going on in the Mishnah over here. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav. Rav says, Machlekes bin Nesarim sheyesh ben arbo. The machlekes, if you can use boards or not, are boards that have 4 tefachim. The Rebbe Meir is like Zeres Tikra, because Rebbe Meir holds you can't use boards that are 4 tefachim wide or more, because it looks like a roof. People are going to think you can just like use your roof in your house. You don't have to leave your house ever for sukkahs, right? You just, well, I got Scott. I don't have a metal roof. I got a wooden roof. Good to go. No. Rabbi Yehuda, less exeris tikra. Yehuda apparently is not worried about people thinking they can use their roof for their sukkah because it's too obvious. You got to go into your sukkah or whatever the reasons are. He's not concerned for the exera of tikra. And therefore, if you use boards for your, even though the 4 tefachim wide, if you use boards for your sukkah, that's fine. People aren't going to think you can use your house's roof. It's ridiculous. But if the boards are less than 3 tefachim, sorry, less than 4 tefachim, then everyone holds it's fine. Because, come on, it's not a roof, it's a little tiny board. So that's how Rav learns. The machlokas is only when they're more than 4 tefachim. Why? But less than 4 tefachim, that's schach. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says differently. V'she'ein ben arbo machlokas. Aval yesh ben arbo divrei kol psula. If they're 4 tefachim boards, everyone holds its puzzle. No one would say you're allowed to, even Rabbi Yehuda, who says you can use boards, wasn't afraid that boards is 4 tefachim wide. They're arguing over when it's not 4 tefachim wide. Ein bohen arba, ba'afilu pachas mishleisha, hakanem ba'almen inu. Wait a minute. If they're not 4 tefachim wide, they're less than that, even if it's less than 3, then Rabbi Meir holds no way? Something's confusing here. What are they actually arguing? If they're arguing over less than 4, then Rabbi Meir holds you can't use boards that are less than 4 tefachim. And what? Well, then when can you use them? When can you use wood? Like, where's the limit here? You can never use wood for... You have to use wood for schach. What's going on? They're hakanim ba'alman inu. I mean, they're just reeds. So he passes all reeds? He passes all schach? Doesn't make any sense. Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa said, hachiko amar. This is what we mean. This is what Shmuel meant. Yesh behen arba, if they're 4 tefachim wide, divrei kol psula, everyone agrees, no good. Pachos mishlosha, if they're less than 3 tefachim, divrei kol kshera, then everyone will hold that is good. My taima, why? Kanim ba'amen inu, because they're just reeds. That's schach. Ki pligi, when they argue, mishlosha arba, from in between 3 till 4 tefachim. Marsa v'rkevin alisnehu shir mokim. One holds that since they don't have 4 tefachim, which is the shiur of some kind of significant place, we talked about that in Hilchos Shabbos. Hilchos Shabbos, there's some kind of din of 4 tefachim, so it's at least some sort of significance. Lef makom. Then le gazrinan. Since it's not 4 tefachim, then we don't make a gzera. That's what Yehuda said. It's not significant. When you get to 4, it's a problem. But less than 4 is fine. Umar savar, Rabbi Meir holds, kevin the nafkilu mataris lavud gazrinan. Once you leave the shiur of three tvachim, which is lavud, then we get nervous and we start to make zeres, and we won't let you use that. So let me just summarize this and then we'll call it a day. So the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda holds you can use boards, and Rabbi Meir holds you cannot use boards. And the Mishnah has another point that we'll get to as we go. But what is this machlok? When do they argue? So that is a machlok, is Rav and Shmuel when they argue. Rav is the easy way to look at it. Rav says they argue over boards. That if it's more than four tvachim, then Rabbi Yehuda holds, it's fine, I don't care. And Rabbi Meir says, what are you talking about? You can use a board more than four tvachim? That's like a roof. People are going to think you can just use your roof for schach. Doesn't mean you can't do that. So that's what they argue about. And according to Shmuel, there's three categories. More than four tvachim, according to him, even Rabbi Yehuda would never allow that. Less than three tvachim, everyone agrees. That's a piece of wood. But in between three and four tvachim, that's where the zemachloik is. According to Rabbi Yehuda, what's the problem? And according to Rabbi Meir, once it's not lavud anymore, so then we start to make zeris. We don't like it to be schach pasul or problematic schach or concern for schach if it's more than three tvachim. Less than three tvachim, those are just sticks, and we have lavud principles anyway. But in between three and four, no, I'm not willing to say that, says Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Huda says, come on, that's nothing. We're not worried about that. So that's what we're up to. Yud Dalet Amir Aleph at the bottom. Shkoyach, we got through Tum V'Tara, yeah? Shkoyach.